season of creation that invites the celebration of the gift of God in creation each year from September 1st to October 4th, usually at St. Francis. This was initiated in 1989 by the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew of the Eastern Orthodox Church. The season has become a global observance, now observed by the wide ecumenical community. There is a new recognition emerging slowly but surely in all religious communities of the bonds we share, not only with each other, but with every living creature on earth, with all creation as a deeply interconnected living reality. As a human species, we have come to a time where we must recover this wisdom. It is not new, it is very old, for our very survival. And so we are invited to pray, to reflect as individuals, as communities, on the astounding miracle of life that comes to us from God. As Christians say, through Christ, in Christ, through whom all things have been made. We are challenged to read and discern the abundant divine presence all about us and within us, which we call as Christians the universal Christ, through whom all things were made. Recognizing our intimate relationship to creation, we ask a very practical question. How may we more sustainably inhabit our common home? We have lots of undone major housekeeping to do. How can we better lift up our voices in the public sphere? How can we take bold action necessary to preserve creation in all its complexity and specificity? If ever there was a time that called for this wisdom, this example in the activism of faith communities, that time certainly is now. The focus for our prayers this year is the web of life. The psalmist, as we just recited, asserts, how many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you have made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. I'd like to offer this morning a very brief summary glimpse of some of the intricacies of the web of life that we are learning more clearly from what we call the book of nature. I have an image that shows the similarity of patterns between a plant, a human heart, and the river's network of the Amazon. We are similar. We come from the same place. Our early church tradition calls this the first scriptures. And today, it is science that speaks this language, and we are fools if we pay no attention to it. My sermon, my supporting references are in the written text, which you can find on St. Ben's website. To begin, prayer with the psalmist is a way that we offer our grief and our lament. Today we grieve God's creatures that are disappearing from earth in a way we can scarcely comprehend. Leaders in the faith communities who have written to us inviting us this season of creation write from humble insects to majestic animals, from microscopic plankton to towering trees. Creatures across God's dominion are becoming extinct and may never be seen again. The assessment of a recent United Nations-sponsored report is that 1 million species face extinction. 40% of amphibian species, 1/3 of coral reefs, and 1/3 of marine animals are at risk of disappearing forever. The consensus among scientists is that we have moved to the 6th mass extinction of species since the Cambrian period, 560 million years ago, the evolution of life on Earth. Climate change accelerates the crisis, but the main culprit is the reckless human use of land and the loss of habitat. People are people of faith recognize another tragedy in that loss in our way of forgiving it by the way that we live. It's amplified by the injustice of our human-made crisis. The most vulnerable populations of people and species that suffer most deeply when the web of life begins to unravel. Our faith calls us to respond to this crisis with the urgency born of moral clarity. Many of us over the age of 60 remember this stunning image sent by the Apollo 8 astronauts orbiting the moon on Christmas Eve, 1968. The beauty of an Earth rocket. Never before have we seen such a vision of our island home against the blackness of outer space. The science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke noted the image shows how wrong it is to call this planet Earth when it clearly is an ocean. Nearly three-quarters of the surface of our planet is covered with water. The futurist James Lovelock says, the fact that we live on an ocean planet is only just beginning to penetrate the dusty science of geology. Today, biologists say that simple life as bacteria emerged in the ocean around 3.8 billion years ago near the deep volcanic vents that pour heat and nutrients out of the interior of the Earth. Perhaps such simple life is not so rare in the universe. Complex life, however, has evolved through an interplay of rare and seemingly random factors that has preserved liquid water on the surface of our planet for almost 4 billion years. Considering this, it may be that intelligent life is rare, which is the thesis of a book called Rare Earth. In that case, perhaps our biggest mistake as a species is to take life on this planet for granted as a throwaway. And this is exactly the point of our spiritual traditions. As we trace life's origins to the oceans, it is not surprising how human civilization has long depended upon them. The oceans are one of humanity's most important natural resources. The greatest portion of all life on Earth is in the oceans. Their vastness has made them appear to be limitless resources of food, transportation, recreation, and all. But the difficulty of fencing them and policing them has left them as just open access resources to be exploited by anyone with the means. We've seen this graphically in the images of trash in the oceans that have been building up since the 1980s. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, as it's called, is twice the size of France, 600,000 square miles, 37,000 tons, and growing by the day. And such garbage patches can be found in the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. They said that unrestrained use of disposable and single-use plastic items is the biggest cause of such huge amounts of plastic waste being generated. Obviously, in our time, we are beginning to reach the limits of the oceans, and we must now begin to utilize and govern them in a more sustainable way. For decades, the ocean has served as our best defense against climate change. But we say that it is said that 90% of the heat from our atmosphere has been absorbed in the ocean. But as a planetary sponge, it has taken a toll. Since 1970, global sea temperature has increased by around 1 degree Fahrenheit. And that's warmer than at any time since it was begun to be recorded in 1880. Warming is the most immediate agent of the ocean's chaos, as we see in hurricanes recently, especially this past week, Hurricane Dorian. Increasingly large, slow moving and destructive. Not to mention the melting polar ice caps, the glaciers, and the mountains, and Arctic areas, changing the atmospheric and ocean currents, raising the sea levels, but increasingly threatening coastal population centers around the world. Delicate interplay of our creation. After the sun, the oceans of the earth are the primary driver of climate on earth. And it's vital for our survival that they be kept cool, below 15 degrees centigrade. Whenever the surface temperature of the ocean rises above 15 degrees centigrade, they become a desert, no bereft of life in the Sahara. Warming is just one of the three-pronged assault on marine life. As oceans absorb carbon dioxide, it becomes more acidic, less saturated with calcium carbonate that supports corals and shellfish that are integral to the food web. Coral reefs occupy only 1% about of the world's oceans, from the Caribbean to the Coral Triangle centered in Indonesia and Southeast Asia. They are home to a quarter of all marine species. It's been said that they have survived destructive fishing, pollution, mining for construction materials, the anchors of cruise ships, and even nuclear bomb tests. But climate change has proven to be their nemesis. The fish themselves are far from immune with the disruption of larval fish life. And the third, more immediate threat is called deoxygenation. The ocean has been losing oxygen, they say, 2 to 5% in the past 50 years. Likely because of rising temperatures. Warm water holds less oxygen, and warm water doesn't circulate the oxygen. And when oxygen goes way down, it's effectively habitat loss, says Lisa Levin, a professor of Scripps Institute of Oceanography. Elizabeth Browning penned the famous and familiar words, "Earth is crammed with heaven, every bush is aflame with the fire of God, but only those who see take off their shoes." Learning to listen and to nurture the presence of God in our hearts opens us to the whisper and grace of God in creation. A discovery that we are part of a relationship much larger than we've ever culturally imagined in our very sightedness. We take off the shoes of our soul with the enthusiasm of a child and their feet into the sand. And Browning adds, the rest of us just pick theirs. Ecological crisis cannot be resolved by merely switching energy sources, which is still a necessary step. The crisis invites us into a profoundly different relationship with the planet and the rest of life, a different sense of who we are and what is real. Moses asked the people of Israel, will they choose life? And that question, will we choose life, has become more pointed than ever for humanity. I said earlier, what is asked of us is not something new, but a recovery of something we've lost. Spiritual traditions have been saying it for a long time. Yesterday, in a tempest, Marcus Greenwich Pope tried to put our feet in the sand, so to speak, and feel that sense of oneness with the creation. This picture was taken by Celeste Bennington. The Franciscan, Richard Rohr, describes the new cosmology rooted in Christian tradition that we must recover. Another word, incarnation. He says it's a Christ-soaked world. Jesus, the Word made flesh, comes out of the world rather than into the world. Christ was here all the time. In Christ, all of history and all of us are held together. And you do not have to use the word Christ to experience this radical unity. 16 years ago, Harvard Medical School awarded the noted journalist Bill Moyers with the Global Environmental Citizen Award. Moyers concluded his acceptance speech with a recognition that we've been amplified many times in these past short years. He said, "The news is not good these days. I can tell you, though, as a journalist, I know the news is never the end of the story. The news can be the truth that sets us free, not only to feel, but to fight for the future we want. And the will to fight is the antidote to despair, the cure for cynicism. But we need to match the science of human health with what the ancient Israelites called Chokhmah, the science of the heart, the capacity to see, to feel, and then to act, as if the future depends.